And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest is Klaus Dohna, and he is joining us from Vienna, Austria, where it is very early in the morning. Klaus, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Kevin, or let's better say good evening for you, and a heartfelt good evening to your listeners. You are right, it's just close after 4 o'clock, and you can imagine that this is usually not the best time to do a live interview.
Yeah, I realize that, and that's why I said what I said about how much we appreciate you for being willing to be up and to do this show. You know, we don't pre-record shows, and the reason we don't do that is because of the fact that I like for everything to be very spontaneous, and pre-recorded is not too spontaneous. So we do them all live, and you're a very good sport for being up and doing this with us. It's been a while. It's you've been with us a couple of times. It's been a while since you've been with us, and I am quite certain there have been some developments in your work with I don't know what else to call it, forbidden information about our ancient past.
Yes, there is quite a time in between, and a lot of new researches. For example, I was three times already in Crete. That's one of the most interesting places. And you know the Greek mythology about Zeus and also the Olymp. All these stories are connected with Crete, has a very old tradition and a very old history. And since a few months, I'm also in contact with wonderful people in Armenia, which is also one of the most interesting countries on researching for human history. Because, as you know, that the Armenian people had a very big problem at the already in the past, and also at the beginning of the 20th century, because of the Turkish genocide, or I hope I pronounced it the right way. And I received an English written book, Armenians and Old Armenia, written by an Armenian physicist, Paris Haroni, and he did a great research on Armenians' history. And what I found out that everybody in these days is talking about the oldest archaeological finding in Cappadocia, Göbekli Tepe. Yeah. Which is now dated already a little bit over 10,000 years, and this is all connected with the history of the old Armenian kingdom. That means that goes back over 10,000 years, and it was definitely the Armenian history. Also, other places in Cappadocia, and they have fantastic stone circles there in Armenia. Also this physicist, Professor Haroni, he did the researches on these stone circles, and he found out that they have to have an age of at least 7,500 to 8,000 years. So that's very, very interesting, and I'm invited to do personal research there in July.
We normally pronounce the name of the city, the area, Cappadocia, but it is correctly, as you say it, Cappadocia. And this is the location as well of the underground. Massive underground city, ancient city, is in the area of Cappadocia.
That's right, yes, yes.
Have you been in that ancient underground city?
Not yet, not yet.
What is it that besides Göbekli Tepe, is there anything else in that area that has drawn your interest? Any artifacts or anything, or is it all the stuff at Göbekli Tepe?
No, it's not only Göbekli Tepe, but this is the most researched at the moment from German archaeologists. And also Andrew Collins, he writes right now a book about Göbekli Tepe, and he did personally several months of researches on the spot, and I'm really looking forward on his reports, because Andrew Collins is real one of the great researchers and very serious. But I'm more interested now in visiting Armenia, because I will have the chance to visit some of these stone circle areas and also some of the museums. And I'm quite sure that they might have a lot of real old artifacts, and that's my interest mainly.
Now, as yet, you have not visited Göbekli Tepe, is that right?
That's right, I didn't. You know, you cannot be everywhere in short time. You have to select certain points, and for me at the moment, Crete is very interesting, and I also have to do something else in South America. I visited also last year two times South Africa, and I had the chance to visit with Michael Tellinger several places. And one of the most intriguing for me, of course, the hundred thousands of stone circles there, very huge, immense stone circles, where nobody really knows yet what was their purpose, because for the official archaeologists, these stone circles, and there are really hundred thousands of them, these were cow stallages, because what Michael Tellinger found out is that these stone circles are producing a sound and also energy. That means that in nighttime, inside the stone circles, the earth is quite warmer than outside. And of course, many of the animals, they are more sensitive, like we human. They feel the warmness inside the stone circle, and that's why they walk inside and they sleep in there. But if you look at the structures, and they must be very, very old, because you can see sometimes only a little bit the top of the walls on the surface, so the rest is definitely under the earth. So that means we are really talking about a very, very big age. Michael Tellinger is talking about between 80,000 and 200,000 years, but this has to be proved with scientists. But as you can see some photos on his website, these stone circles, they are really very big and very old, and most of them, the walls are closed. So that's a little bit similar with Zimbabwe, the very famous big tower which has no window, no door, and still we don't know exactly what was the purpose for it. But I had also the chance to visit with Michael a giant footprint, which is about 120 centimeters long, outside on a very, very quiet place. I mean, there is usually nobody out there. And it also proves one of my researches that giants must have been here on Earth.
Well, that footprint, Michael Tellinger, as a matter of fact, I know exactly what you're talking about, because Michael Tellinger was on my show and presented that footprint, you know, the picture.
Yeah.
And It's huge. I mean, this whoever made that footprint had to be 40 feet tall.
Approximately, 40 feet. Wait a minute. In meters, it must have been around 7 meters. That means 20, 25 feet.
Well, that's still, that's a huge person.
Yeah, but for me it was very important because, as you remember, we found bones of a 7.6 meter, meaning over nearly close to 25 feet, human bones in Ecuador.
Yeah.
And I had the possibility to take 4 or 5 pieces with me, and I selected some pieces which I thought might be possible to do an identification through experts. And I brought them back home, and we had some doctors and also specialists looking at them, specialists for anatomy, and they found out, they identified 3 pieces. One was part of a heel bone, one was a so-called os occipitale, which means 2 bones we have under the skull, and they make us able to move the head around. And the third one, which could be identified, was a nose bone. But always the same reaction. It looks definitely like human bone, but it's impossible because it's approximately 5 times bigger than normal human. But if you calculate that the Spaniards or South Americans, indigenous, they were not that big. They were approximately 150, 160 centimeters. So if you multiply this, you reach exactly the size of approximately 7.5 meters. And very interesting, with this story of 7.6 meter or 25 feet giants, made me research more and more in archives and also in South America, in Ecuador especially. And there are writings from historians that in the 16th century, for example, Chiesa de León, a famous historian of these times, he was writing that today we found several human skeletons. They were 5 times taller than we were. And another connecting point I got through Manuel Palacios, he is an Ecuadorian great researcher, from the Cuevas de los Tayos. The Cuevas de los Tayos is a huge underground tunnel system in Ecuador. And he showed me a photo inside one of the very big rooms, halls, and you can see that these are man-made because you can see exactly the entrance and everything, and there was a wall painting on the wall, and it shows a man, and this wall painting has exactly the size of 25 feet.
And this is in Ecuador, right?
This is in Ecuador, yes, uh-huh. That's right. And now you have the giant footprint in South Africa, which focus also approximately the same size. And you have other footprints found all over the world, also different sizes. But what I heard is that also in Sri Lanka is a giant footprint, which could be approximately the same size. So you see, there must be something behind all these facts.
You know, I'm very glad that you told us about the bones, multiple bones that you took and had examined by medical experts.
Yes.
And the reason I'm glad that you mentioned that is because all I remembered about that was that you had a heel bone.
Yes.
And I mentioned that on the air one night.
Sorry?
I mentioned it on the air on the show. And I don't remember if it was a caller or somebody that sent in a flash message, but the response was that, the heel bone is not enough to identify the height and all of that, and it's probably a miscalculation. But you have multiple bones, and especially the, I believe it's pronounced occipital.
Yes, yes.
Now, if that is five times the size of ours, and the heel bone is five times the size, now it's not a miscalculation. Now it's a clear observation.
Yeah, and this calculation was already existing before, because when this Ecuadorian father found the broken bones in the place which is called Guayaranuma, which means in the translated the cemetery of the giants, when he found these broken bones, he identified and made all the measurements already on the spot. So we were not the first who found out that the size is approximately five times bigger. That was already in 1964, done by Father Carlos Vaca already.
But yours was the first done by medical experts, was it not?
That's right, but as far as I got the information from the family of Father Carlos Vaca, also in Ecuador, he asked some of the doctors in this area to do check on the bones. So there were also medical doctors doing a research in Ecuador already in the 60s.
All right. Now, you've got giants. You've, as far as I'm concerned, you have well documented the existence of real giants that appear to be human in South America.
Yeah.
We have this footprint over, I'm not sure where it is, in Africa, though, with Michael Tellinger. And anybody that looks at that will have absolutely no doubt that that's a human footprint, or it looks human. It's not a bear, it's not an ape, it's human. And it's gigantic. And you've mentioned other giants around the world. Why? Now, we only have, well, I'll tell you what. I'll ask this question, and then we'll get your answer to it on the other side of the break. We only have a few seconds here before the break. So the question is, why, since it's apparently so well documented, why are experts, officialdom, trying to hide it?
Were hidden. But I think even in our days, the technology is getting better and better. The information through the internet is also a great technology. But you have to be careful, because sometimes I receive photos about so-called giants, which are that giant, that big. If you look, and some friends of mine, they are experts in checking photos on reality or fake. 99% of the photos showing giants, real giant skulls and everything on the internet are Photoshop documents. And
yeah,
that's a pity, because that again makes the real reports misunderstanding.
I'm not sure what the Smithsonian has done with the giant skeletons. Most, as you say, most of the skeletons, the giant skeletons that have been found here in the U.S., and there have been literally hundreds of them. In fact, from one cave, over 60 giant skeletons were removed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the Smithsonian has done with them. I would not suspect that they have destroyed all of them. I would suspect they, I'm not sure they destroyed any of them. But I would suspect even if they destroyed some and disposed of them, they would have some still in their private vaults somewhere. And my question has to do with, so what's the big secret? Why not just go ahead and bring it out? Just go ahead and put them on display.
Yeah, would be great.
Another guest that I had on the show, I asked that same question. And the guest said that he thought that it was a combination of at least a couple of things. One, that these people were highly advanced and at one point, and they had high technology at one point. And then all of that was destroyed by great cataclysms, and that the powers that be do not want us to be thinking that people of such high technology can be wiped out in a moment, because that makes us harder to manage. Now, I don't know. It sounds like a good idea. I don't know if that would be the case. What do you think about it?
Sounds understandable. Because, for example, if we talk about the age of human, I don't know if I told you in our last interview about the findings in Colombia of petrified cultivated fruits and vegetables.
No.
In Colombia, there is a professor for anthropology, and for ancient plants and plant research, and he found in an area which is called Villa de Leyva, where there are millions of fossils, he found petrified cultivated fruits and vegetables like corn, pineapple, cocoa beans, avocado, and several others. That means also in the same area, they found a stone plate, and in the stone plate, you see the petrified skeleton of a human hand and a human foot. The stone plate, geological dating is 120 to 140 million years. And then you have in the same area cultivated petrified fruits and vegetables, which means here we are talking really about millions and millions of years. So that means the whole age dating of human is wrong, as also one of a great researcher and a friend of mine, Michael Cremo, I respect very much. He wrote the book Forbidden Archaeology. If you read this, you find many of these samples, and I was talking with Michael last year in May at the Megalithomania conference in Glastonbury, and we were talking about the giant bones, and he promised me that he will also come to Vienna to check those bones I brought from South America, and also I tried to make him an appointment in Colombia that he can see personally all these petrified fruits and vegetables. And I do not think that dinosaurs, or even before, let's say 100 and 120 million years, would have been able to cultivate fruits and vegetables.
I think you're probably correct about that. Also, it's very interesting, you brought up dinosaurs. You know, the standard story is that dinosaurs suddenly disappeared 65 million years ago, and that we did not appear till much, 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 much later. But in South America, there are drawings, and not just South America. Actually, I think also, I'm pretty sure, at Göbekli Tepe, there are carvings of dinosaurs. And so whenever you look at these drawings in South America or carvings elsewhere, showing dinosaurs, you have to ask yourself, now these are humans that did the drawings and the carvings, how did they know what these dinosaurs look like if the official story is correct? Because the dinosaurs disappeared 65 million years ago, and we didn't appear until much, much, much later. The only answer to that has to be that dinosaurs were still around at the same time humans were around.
There's a very, very wonderful example. A small town in Mexico called Acámbaro. They have there a private museum now, because this collection still is not recognized by the official cultural institutions in Mexico. Even there were done already several age datings on terracotta figurines, little statues, animals showing, and most of these animals represented by these species are showing dinosaurs, and age datings are going back until 6,000 years. That means between 2,500 years and 6,000 years. And some of these figurines are so perfect that you definitely can see even what kind of dinosaurs they were showing. And here is really the big question: how those people who made these artifacts could have known already in the beginning of last century how a dinosaur is looking like. And everybody who is really interested in these things should visit this small museum in Acámbaro in Mexico. It's about 3 hours bus drive outside Mexico City.
The
30, I forgot to tell you how many they have there. Over 30,000.
30,000, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the carvings, if we're talking about the same collection, I've seen some pictures of some of these little, they're not carvings, they're modeled.
No,
they're like little, yes, little statues, figurines.
Right.
Yeah, and one of them shows what appears to be a young boy on the back of a dinosaur.
There are several, not only one.
Now, do you think that was just kind of fanciful license of the artist, or do you think that maybe some of these dinosaurs were domesticated?
That's the big question.
So, what's your theory on that?
That's very hard. This is one of the things which I don't have any answer. And you have, on the other side, you have the stone collection of Dr. Cabrera in Ica in Peru. Over 12,000 stones with ink carvings and also showing dinosaurs. But these stones and the ink carvings must be very, very old. And then you have the contrary in Mexico, statues, little statues, figurines showing dinosaurs, and these age datings were between 2,500 and 6,000 years. So the big difference, Dr. Cabrera was always talking about millions of years, and on the other hand you have artifacts which were made about 6,000 years ago. How these artists could have known how a dinosaur is looking like, I really don't have a real answer.
All right, we have a break coming up here in just a moment, and when we come back, I want to deal with the humans and the dinosaur thing just a little bit more. This is very, very intriguing. I mean, it's beyond most people's ability to comprehend, because, you know, if those dinosaurs were still around when humans were around just a few thousand years ago, there's the possibility there may still be some of these dinosaurs alive in some very remote place on this planet. We'll talk about that a little bit when we come back. We're talking this evening with the Klaus Donna. And what a fascinating, fascinating storehouse of information he is. Now, Klaus, when we went away for break, we were talking about the documentation of the fact that humans were definitely alive at the time when dinosaurs were alive. Some of these objects date to a few thousand years ago. Seems like a long time to us because of the notion of history we've been given. But just a few thousand years ago. So the question is, what do you think about the possibility that there may still be some of these dinosaurs living in some very remote location? Do you think that's possible?
There are some stories from Central Africa, but I don't know how real these stories are. Could be, because if, as we see by ourselves on some of the researches, that the history is completely different. And not everything in our days, everything is connected with aliens. I fully do not agree with this, because there are too many facts that there must have been high civilizations on Earth in the past already, Kevin.
Are you familiar with a science fiction, an old science fiction film called The Lost World?
Could be.
This film is, well, it starts off with the setting in London, and a scientist who does a lot of field work presents to the Royal Academy of Sciences that he had located a lost world in which, and it was in Africa, in which there were dinosaurs living. And so they do a lot of ridicule, and they scorch him pretty well. But he finally convinces them to do an expedition to check and see if he's lying. And so they do the expedition, and indeed do find this lost world in Africa, just a small area, where there are dinosaurs still living. And I've wondered if perhaps that film was somewhat based on these stories that come out of Africa about sightings of these, the story I've heard most often, what they're describing is what we would call a brontosaurus. It's deep into Africa, and in a river marsh area. But I wondered if that film was perhaps based on that. But obviously, the documentation exists that humans were alive at the time dinosaurs were alive, and there's no other way they could have drawn pictures of them or made figurines of them.
Wall paintings are all over the world. A very famous one showing a T-Rex is made by the Anasazis. I received a photograph from Professor Wayne DeLoria.
And that's in America.
That's in the United States, and that's not the only one. There are many of them. And Professor DeLoria did a research with one indigenous lady in the United States, and she researched, I think, a few hundreds of them.
The Anasazi, they did not entirely live on cliffs, but most of the Anasazi population they were cliff dwellers. They lived on cliffs. And one reason might just be that down on the canyon floor there may have been from time to time, you know, some dinosaurs coming through and being very dangerous to them.
That could be one of the reasons, yeah.
There's a lot of speculation about why they lived in such difficult places.
Yes.
And I mean, some of these places, there's just almost no way to climb up there, but they did it. And they even did some of their farming on the tops of cliffs.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, they themselves are a great mystery, and nobody really knows who they were.
That's right, yeah. There are so many things in the past where you don't find a final answer, but from time to time you get here an information, you see here something, and then finally, I always say, every piece, every story from the past is a kind of puzzle, and if you try to put them as many as possible together, maybe you can get one day a real good picture.
Yeah.
And one thing also, Kevin, in the past, how many times scientists by themselves, they had to change their mind? For example, just let's talk about the world. Before, it was known that the world is round, and then in the Middle Age, if somebody would have said that the world is round, he would have had trouble because the world was flat, and if you go too far outside, you might fall down. And coming back to Armenia, I have just here in front the book of Professor Haroni. He is showing on three stones with holes inside in Armenia how they could calculate the latitude and earth size with three stones instrument. And he is writing here, the famous Armenian astronomer, mathematician and philosopher of 7th century AD, Ananya Shirakatsi, in his book Cosmology and Chronology, writes that Hithan Armenian philosophers affirmed that Earth is ball formed and people and animals live on all its sides, and that there are stone drawings which shows the engravings on rocks near Lake Seban about 5 millennium BC, where you can see the Earth round, and on all four sides you have people staying. I mean, that's 5 millennium BC. So,
well, in 5,000 years BC,
yes,
that means that they were far smarter and far more advanced than what we had in the so-called Middle Ages.
That's right.
And that would, in some way, bolster my theory that I've stated many times, and that is that we now, in this present day, are just beginning to crawl out of the Stone Age.
There are so many. They must have known so many kind of technologies, whatever. One of the big arguments is always, if I talk about, for example, there must have been a global civilization, or there must have been higher civilizations on Earth, always the question is, so why don't we find more things? And the next one is, when I talk about the stones we found with the same unknown writing all over the world, if they were intelligent, why did they use stones? And then I always give a nice example. I say, do you remember, Kevin, the first computer floppy disks, the soft one, the big
one? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you read one of them today?
No.
Or the little disks. The new computers, they don't have this technology anymore. And the old ones, all the people, they throw them away. So one day you cannot read. Already today, it's very difficult to find a place where you can read the soft floppy disks.
We have to step away for a break. we will be back. You're exactly right. If you want something to last, engrave it on stone. When our civilization is in dust, many of the monuments that we have built of stone will still be standing with writing on them. When we went away for break, we're talking about, you know, the obvious evidence that there has been not only giants, real, honest to God, giant humans. We've talked about the fact that there is solid evidence, not just kind of evidence, but I mean solid documentation that humans existed at the same time on this planet as dinosaurs. And we've talked about the fact that there is solid evidence for a global civilization.
Yes.
What brought the end of the global civilization?
Yeah, that's also still a big question. Could be, and what I think, and that there are many, many stories in with the indigenous people all over the world through the elders and the shamans about several global catastrophes, but what also is one of the possibilities that human destroyed themselves. And Kevin, if we continue life as we are doing, I'm quite scared about our children and their children's for their future.
Well, I have theories about absolutely everything, I guess. But this is one that I've talked about. If things continue as they are, I don't think we're going to destroy all of human life on the planet. But it won't, listen, it doesn't take much to totally destroy the underlying infrastructure for modern civilization. The underlying infrastructure for modern civilization can be gone in a day. It really could.
That's right.
And then you have a bunch of humans left without working cell phones, without working computers, no electricity, and all of a sudden, you know, you're back into the Stone Age.
Yes.
And it can literally happen overnight. And culture will change just like that. And civilization will change just like that. And things that we have written on paper will survive for a while, but not for long. And all of the information stored in computers will be gone.
That's right.
Just like that. So we have a very, our civilization is a very tenuous and fragile thing. And if we wish to preserve it, we wish to continue it, there's no way that we can continue going down the path that we have been going now for many, many decades, and that, and in fact, many, many years. The path of survival of the fittest, where our interpretation of that is those who throw the biggest fit survive. Mm-hmm. And so if if you want to survive, you got to be the baddest ass in the valley. That can't work and keep the civilization that we've got. All right, I'd like to open up the telephone lines and invite our audience to join us in this conversation. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, it's Kathy in Las Vegas.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Mr. Donna.
Hello, good morning.
I actually was one of the person that named one of their cats after you.
Oh.
On Facebook.
I love animals.
Last time you were on the conference for Kevin Smith show, you were going to go into some details about Mount Kailash, and the time ran out, and I was hoping that I would be able to hear a little bit more about what you had to say about what's interesting up there, and how the Chinese are just starting to pave the roads around it to have access to people. I was wondering what you knew.
Yes, Mount Kailash, Professor Muldashev, he wrote his book. He called it, in German translation, it was called The Third Eye. There he is writing about the Samadhi's tunnels. And right now, he is finishing writing the book about mine. No, he did it already in Russian language, sorry. The book with all the details of his researches on, not on, because that's forbidden, around the Mount Kailash. And I will send to him a mail this afternoon, and I will ask him if there is any possibility of the translating this book into English, because all the details he was writing in his book.
Oh, that's awesome.
And as soon as I get an answer, I will transmit it. I will call Kevin, and I will ask him in one of his shows to mention it.
And I'll be glad to do so.
That'd be wonderful. Thank you.
About the Samadhis, about the sleeping giants, this book is translated already into English, and I think it can be downloaded on the Internet.
Kathy, thank you so much for the call. Klaus, what about the sleeping giants? What is that about?
That's what Professor Muldashev was researching in Tibet. He is the most famous eye doctor, because he did the only one functioning eye transplantation to a lady. And he went several times on his researches to Tibet, and after a while he could get friendship with two monks. These two monks were the keeper of one of the Samadhi tunnels. Samadhi tunnels are tunnels in Tibet where he by himself could check it after on his last trip, and he could see the samadhis. What the monks are saying, these are people from normal size up to 10 meters. 10 meters is about 30, close to 30 feet. There are different people in lotus seat inside the tunnels. And the body has no function, but as the monks explain, they are connected with a silver string with the universe, and they could come back to life whenever they would decide.
And he saw some of these?
Yes, he had to do special meditations and a special diet and everything, and then he could go inside, but only that far that he could see the samadhis, because they are protected by energy, and there are stories that Chinese soldiers had to go inside these tunnels, but they died all through energy. And he also explained when he was going inside, it started the headache. And the headache is getting stronger and stronger, and at the point you know where your pain is too strong, you should stop, because if you continue, then you definitely die.
Now this, I have to tell you, this is a story I had not heard. It's a story with which I was completely not familiar.
Yeah, tell me.
I had never heard it. Now, he's a scientist, right?
And he is member of the Academy of Science in Moscow. He is the most famous eye doctor. So he is a really more than serious person. But even his colleagues in Russia didn't believe him. So when he got the information about my bones from South America, he visited me in Vienna, and we had two wonderful days with exchanging information.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming. Sorry about that.
Yeah, Brent.
Klaus, I hate to interrupt you, but I have to, there are several things I'd like to ask you, but one comment I would like to make first.
Yes?
I appreciate the fact that you're willing to say you don't know.
Yes?
You don't say it in those many terms, but when you don't know enough information, you say, I don't have an opinion. So thank you.
Thank you very much, but this is the way I would like to say, because I don't make... I don't try to put my own, or let's say, I don't try to interpret something into something which I do not know.
Thank you. Now, when you were on one of the eye conferences, you ended by saying you had a lot of information about the little people.
Yes,
sir.
Could
you expound on that?
Yes, especially the little people. You know that Dr. Stephen Greer had a big press release about this little mummy found in Chile. I don't know if you heard about it.
Yes.
Yes. We had this little mummy already 2005 in Austria. And I had the help of some professors of the university, and they checked this little mummy, and they found out definitely that it is not a fetus, that it looks like a child in the age between 4 and 6 years, but there are some differences. Let's say we human, we have 12 ribs, and these little mummy had only 10 ribs, and so further on. But concerning the little people in Russia, they found also a human being like this one, but exactly the double size. So that means that our Austrian professors were right when they said it must have been a child in the age between 4 and 6 years, because then the adult would be approximately the double size. That's the one thing. Then when I was 2 years ago in Ecuador, and we went down to the province of Loja, I met some researchers, and they explained me that in one area, in a national park in Ecuador, where there are many petrified trees, and they think they might have found also a hidden city there, they explained me that they saw little people approximately with the size of 25, 30 centimeters, which would be about one foot. I think 1 foot is approximately 30 centimeters. Then they found also little tiles, working tiles over there.
Now, these then little people that they saw, were they alive?
They saw little people, yes. The same information I got in Bolivia from a Bolivian researcher team in the mountains, in the mountain area between Chile and Bolivia. Mm-hmm. And when I was invited to a 3 days meeting of 15 elders of the big American indigenous tribes, the conference story of these 3 days were giants and little people, and they also reported a lot of information about little people.
So Now, I think you said it was in Ecuador where they saw these little people.
And
they were alive.
Yes.
They were alive,
and,
right?
They were alive. And the one in Russia was also alive. So that means I never said 2005 that I showed. I had this little mummy in the exhibition in Berlin, but I did not say, just to get the press interest and people's interest, that this is an alien, because there is no final conclusion that this little mummy is an alien. I mean, not everything must have been automatically aliens.
Just a species we don't know about yet.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Brent, all right, well, thank you, sir.
I think you said you had two questions.
Sir.
Do you have another question, Brent?
Well, I would like to know if he's heard anything about the, for lack of a better term, the Titans found underneath the streets of Athens in Greece.
Ah, good question.
Kevin, I didn't understand very well because I had some noise in my earphones. Can you tell me the question again, please?
Yes. In Athens, they've been excavating for their subway system for many years now. It just keeps expanding. And a few years ago, during the excavation under Athens, their tunneling machine broke through a wall into a big vault underground,
yes.
Ancient vault, and
yes.
There were about 100 giant warrior mummies laid out there. And they immediately closed down that part of the tunneling, and unmarked black cars arrived and trucks, and they carted everything out of there, and nobody has seen or heard from it since. Do you know anything about that?
About the story in yeah. Athens, I heard about it, but definitely I cannot say if this is true or not. But a same or a similar story happened in Hungary, where they did a street construction, and they found underground a room with giant mummies with about 10 feet size, with elongated skulls. And one of the workers made some pictures with his cell phone, but they are not really very good. But I have these pictures, and the skeletons also were transported away, and nobody knows where they are now.
Klaus, could you would you mind attaching those pictures to an email and sending them to me? I'm fascinated with that.
I have to ask the Hungarian researcher, because I never would do something which people who trust me would not accept.
If he will allow it, I would love to see them.
Yes, I will ask him, and there are also some small film sequences.
I would love to see that. The way we know about this thing in Athens is the associate host of this show is Jerry Wills. And Jerry is also the executive producer for Expeditions TV. He was in Greece. He was actually kind of pulling double duty. He was in Greece on one project, and then went to Bulgaria to follow up a story for us, and then went back to Greece. And when he went back to Greece, he met relatives of one of the men involved in that excavation. And they said, you know, look, you know, if you can come back, we can arrange for you to meet with him and talk to him about what he saw. He's one of the people that actually went into that vault when they first broke through it. And so that's how we know about that story. But
at the beginning, Kevin, I was talking that I was already two times last year in Crete, and I'm expected to go again very soon. And there we have informations about huge underground tunnel systems and labyrinths. One of them was researched by Professor Muldashev. That was just before he arrived in Vienna. He was there on an expedition with five of his colleagues of researchers. And there we have also informations of skeletons with the size of over 10 feet. So the Greek and especially Crete, there is so much still under the earth, we have no idea.
Do you have some possibility of getting to go into those underground facilities and see these?
Yes, that's why I'm waiting for the next trip.
And I would assume you will get photographs.
I would think so.
If you do, I hope you will come back and share those with us and talk to us about what you experienced, what you saw.
Yes.
You know, there aren't too many people around the world doing what you do.
And yeah, but it's not easy, believe me.
How do you go about finding out about these very, otherwise very obscure ancient remains and artifacts? How do you find out about that?
I asked several very interesting persons the same question, Kevin, and what they answered me, you are not finding these things. The things are finding you. So I just take it like it is, and I'm always thankful for any information, for any advice or anything from friends all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Klaus, we were talking about, you know, how you go about finding these things, and you said, well, actually, they find me. So I would assume that now that you're famous all over the world, people are sending you things. But in the beginning, before you were famous, how did you get involved with finding these things?
That was the beginning was that I started with
for some reason we've got your audio was breaking up. Try it again, because your audio was breaking up.
Okay. From 1992 I brought several cultural exhibitions from Austria to Japan, and on the ways from Austria to Japan and back and in the hotels through jet lag and so on, I read many books from several authors all over the world, Graham Hancock and others, and I was a skeptical. I didn't really believe all many of these things, and one day I had the idea, the strange idea, why not trying to bring some of these mentioned artifacts to Vienna into an exhibition. You present them and then you give the science the chance to check out on them and find out if these are fraud or real ancient artifacts. And it was a very, very hard work, together with a friend of mine, an Austrian author and researcher, Reinhard Habeck. And we did a lot of work, 1.5 years. We only picked up strange artifacts which are in museums. And then we had a list of 356 pieces. And a museum director, a good friend of mine, he wrote a landing request to his colleagues all over the world. And Kevin, out of 356 requests, we got one acceptance. And then we had only one left 1.5 years until the scheduled exhibition. And all of my friends told me I should give up and pay the penalty to the exhibition hall. And then we started researching on internet. We made trips to South America, to Central America, North America, Europe. And finally, on 20. It was just 1 year ago. It was not 1 year ago. It was 21st of June, 2001. We opened the exhibition in Vienna, and we could show to the public 470 artifacts from all over the world. And through the research of these artifacts, I found out more and more that there is so much reality, even I didn't believe before. And still I'm very skeptical, definitely. I do not believe everything what I hear or what I see on the internet. Mm-hmm. I prefer to see the pieces by myself, to hold them in my hand, to check them, and then I might believe it or not. Still, many artifacts, they cannot be explained in our days yet, and this is one of the big problems, but there is so much out there which we do not yet, and that makes the work more and more interesting.
You know, and these artifacts, I think folks, we've talked a lot about stone and, you know, the stone carvings and writings and so forth. But people need to know it's not all stone. Some of these artifacts, for instance, tiny, tiny, tiny precision-made springs that you would have to have a microscope and micro tools to be able to do that. And they're very ancient. I mean, really, really, really ancient. There are ceramics. Now, that's not stone. That's manufactured. But there are ceramics that are, you know, older than the human race is supposed to be. And now you may know about this. There is a big slab. Now, I've done several shows on this, so some of you in the audience may remember. There's this big slab that was found in Russia, I believe, in Siberia. It is an absolutely accurate topographical map, in other words, in relief, 3D, in relief, of a very large area. I think of Siberia. It shows the rivers, the tributaries.
It was showing the southern Ural area.
There you go. That's it. And this thing is manufactured. It's not stone. It's many layers of stuff, and they've analyzed the layers. I can't remember the details now, but it's stuff we would not have the technology to make now.
That's right.
But now I think the overlay, the top layer, I believe, is ceramic, isn't it?
It is a kind of ceramic, and inside this kind of ceramic, it's very thin. They found some animals, which are dating back millions and millions of years.
And the only way, if you wanted to take a photograph that would show that area that's in that map, you would have to take it from a satellite. So, who had the technology to be that high up and see that area and do a absolutely perfect map in relief? Just unbelievable. Now, sometimes when we talk about an ancient high-tech civilization, sometimes people think we're talking about, well, they were just really, really good at stone. But I think the evidence is clear. They could fly. And, I mean, you've got that evidence from South America, the little model airplanes. And also from Egypt, a model airplane. And
but even the better, the descriptions of the so-called Vimanas in the Mahabharata and in the Vedas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a very interesting point that the explanation in the translations were that these Vimanas used mercury for the ancients.
Uh-huh.
And when I was a few years ago in Teotihuacan in Mexico, the big pyramid area with the sun and moon pyramid and the Quetzalcoatl pyramid.
Yeah.
And I got friendship with the, at that time, director of the archaeological department. He went with me in the storehouse where they kept many of the pieces which they excavated there. And there is one stele, one stone stele, and they call it by themselves the atomic stela, because you can see the drawing of the atom encarved in this stone plate. And he told me also that when they found a tunnel underground the Sun Pyramid, and they went inside, they found one stone box, a perfect worked stone box. And when he opened this box, he closed it immediately because it was filled with liquid mercury.
Wow. Hey, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Gary in Nebraska.
Hello, Gary.
You know, it ought to be a crime that those who we've, in the decades and hundreds of years, were intended to educate us, haven't. And actually contributed to the dumbing of America. And we're so blessed to have folks like Klaus Dana, who I cannot thank enough, bringing this information to us to at least hear his views on. And so I do thank you, Klaus Dana.
Thank you very much.
That's quite an inconvenience for you, I have to admit, but obviously your dedication to this shines through, and I just wanted you to know that I do appreciate it. So thank you, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you, Gary. You know, our audience is around the world, and because people around the world work all different hours, different shifts, we do have people that are up at this time, and you know, on the other side of the planet, and are working, and listen to the show while they're working. But I want to echo what Gary said from for all of us on this side of the planet. You know, it's nighttime, it's not inconvenient for us, and we do realize that it is inconvenient for you to be up and at this time, and we really, really appreciate it.
Kevin, sometimes it's really nice to hear something like the call from Gary before, and also the other two listeners before, because if I read sometimes reactions on interviews that people write that he's definitely a reptilian, because did you see his eyes, or the other are writing he is definitely an Illuminati because he is always showing the pyramid with the shining eye and all these really stupid things. I can just say to your audience, don't worry, I am not a member of any organization. I am not an alien, not a reptilian, nothing. I'm just simple. A private researcher who is trying to get more information about the truths of human history.
Well, you also live in a very fascinating city. And you live, for those of us, again, on this side of the planet, you live not far from Nuremberg, where there was a fantastic UFO sighting back, I think, in the 1600s. And from where you are over to Nuremberg, there are lots of ancient artifacts that have been turned up that are pretty inexplicable. So you're in a pretty rich area, just basically at your back door.
Not so many artifacts were showing up.
Well, maybe the numbers are not, but you do have carvings that have shown up, and you know you've got. So, by the way, let's jump to Samaria for a moment in Iraq.
Yes.
Some of those carvings of their gods, at least people say that's their gods, are very similar to stuff you found in South America as well.
That's right, yes.
And it's one with, it's kind of like an eagle's head and a human body, and he's carrying this bucket. You know?
Yes, yes.
Let's talk about that on the other side of the break. As we went away for break, I had asked about these carvings from the Sumerian era and from Sumeria that basically are identical, almost identical, with carvings in South America. What's the deal with that?
This is a strange story. Not strange, very interesting, because... In South America, there are bronze plates with the same showing the same things on it, like on Sumerian big wars, statues, and so on. But again, if we talk about this, about Sumeria. With the culture is dated about 6,000 years. Again, at this time, this was in this area, there was the big Armenian kingdom. That means if the Armenian history is going back more than 10,000 years and they had already writings concerned Professor Haruni, then the question is, at the time the Sumerian language or writing was discovered, goes it back to the Armenian writing? And this is one of the interesting researches I would like to do on my trip next month to Armenia. Because also if you talk about the Sumerian, and there's a lot on the internet discussion going on about the Anunnakis and all these stories, I prefer to look behind, going into details and try to find out any connections in between some different civilizations and so on. So it's interesting in any way. You said that the same drawings or artifacts you have in Babylonia, meaning in the Middle East, and you have the same in South America. Doesn't it show again? Isn't it again a pointer to a global civilization, for example? And then we have here the famous stories about the two destroyed continents, the one in the Atlantic Ocean, Atlantis, and the other one is Mu in the Pacific region. Did they really exist? And if you ask me, Kevin, I think they really existed because there are several artifacts showing it, and there are also places like one, a South African researcher team found in Mauritania, West Africa, about 480 kilometers inside the country, a little mountain area, and there is one famous place which is called the Eye of Africa, and you can see on the satellite picture that it looks like circles going around. And they did the research over there, and they found out that it has exactly the size which Plato was writing in the old Greek history about Atlantis. And there are 480 kilometers flat desert, but you have millions and millions of shells lying there. So that means that this mountain area was connected with the Atlantic Ocean in the past. And so many, many things in these days are coming up, which are for me a guarantee, or which makes me believe more and more that Atlantis and Mu, the continent, Mu definitely existed in the past, and they disappeared through really global catastrophes.
Well, a whole lot of things that we have been told are just mythological have now been proven to be historical fact. The city of Troy is one of those. The Hittite Empire is one of those. I'm so impressed with the Hittites because they were so hidden for so long.
Yes.
And everybody said, it's all just mythological. But, you know, this empire was one of the four great empires of the time and basically disintegrated from civil war in the family, the royal family. But it was one of the great empires of the time, along with Egypt. And they said, you know, it's all mythological. It's just a good story. That's all. But then it was found.
That's what I think, Kevin, or what I found out, and I think still that every mythology has, and every legend has a big portion of reality.
Well, I think that's right. The stories may get embellished over time, just like with us and George Washington. I cannot tell a lie. Look, if you think the guy never told a lie in his whole life, I've got some beachfront property in Phoenix, Arizona for sale. Sure, he told a lie. He may have been excessively truthful and excessively full of integrity, but at some point in his life, he fudged. You can count on it. It gets embellished over time like that. But that doesn't mean that there was no real George Washington, and it doesn't mean that he was not an honest man. I think you're right with Atlantis and Mu. I think stories have been embellished a lot, but that doesn't mean there was no Atlantis and no Mu.
Right.
The global civilization you talk about is something a lot of people have looked for. Do you think, we're almost to the end of the show, do you think that we're ever going to be able to just really nail it down what that global civilization was and what their language was?
This is even for me a big question, Kevin, which I cannot answer. I hope one day we can get an answer. I hope. And that's why I'm researching and why many others are also researching. And if we put our knowledge together and our research together, maybe finally we can get a real answer.
Well, I am betting if anybody can get that answer, it'll be Klaus Donner.
No, thank you. Don't put the pressure on me.
Klaus, thank you so much for being with us. If you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this show to a close, because I'd like to chat with you just momentarily after the show.
Yes, sure.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Klaus Donner, I told you he was coming. And those of you who paid attention, well, you were here and you enjoyed some fabulous information from one of the world's great researchers into the very ancient past. If you've never seen one of his seminars, there are some on YouTube. Go and watch them, because it's absolutely mind-blowing. And he's really done a great job in documenting a great deal of the information that's in what the great apes would like to consider the Forbidden Zone. That's going to wrap it up for this evening. Remember, we're listener supported. We need your donations in order to continue doing what we do. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you wish to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long.